This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Label Clothing Company. They have been a huge supporter of mine for many years now. And anytime you see me wearing a dress shirt or a suit, it is from them. Everything is custom made. And anyone who knows me knows I hate wearing suits and I hate wearing dress shirts. I not only look dapper, but the clothes feel great and wear really well. So anyone in the need of a custom suit, definitely hit them up. You can find them online at label.co. What is up, everybody? Today we are flipping the script, and I'm going to have Sylvia interview me. Unfortunately, our guest could not make it, and in staying with our dedication to producing the show and doing an episode a week, it is me this week. So it is definitely a little different being on the other side. So I hope you enjoy this. It was super fun. We kind of break down five different ways and things businesses face and just some of my different ideologies on building a business, maintaining a business, how to talk about work-life balance, staying focused, and what kind of hard work and dedication it takes to build a brand. So I do hope you enjoy this. So without further ado, I bring you my host, Sylvia.
What is up, everybody?
I love it.
Today we have a special guest, which is Anthony Vasquez. So today the table's turned. All right.
So to preface this, I'll save Sylvia from having to do the intro here because I know she's dying right now. In keeping with our goal of doing a podcast a week, unfortunately, we had a guest who couldn't make it today. So we decided to flip the script and Sylvia's going to interview me. I'll make this as painless and as easy for you as possible.
I appreciate it. Okay, so Anthony, you've interviewed this year about, we've had like 20-something shows.
Six.
26 shows. 26, yep. Okay, very good. And you know about what drives people and to do whatever they love into their business and all. But what drives you?
Oh man, that's a big question. All right, so I mean, there's a couple of things that drive me. One is, you know, I read a long time ago, Ben Franklin had a saying that if you ask more of yourself than anyone can ever ask of you, you'll never let yourself down. So I've always held that to be true. And I find that being accountable to others, whether it's the people I work with, the clients I work for and with, if you don't show up and you don't continually ask more of yourself on a daily basis, you're ultimately going to fail those people. So that's number one for me. Number two, and this is something we've spoken about on the show, and I know you're passionate about it as well, is, you know, I think I have an unfair advantage being that my dad was not born, you know, in the mainland United States. He was born in Puerto Rico. So, and I think, you know, it's something I'm very passionate about now, especially with all the negative sentiment that's been given to immigrants or people who, right. You know, I know my dad's not an immigrant. Let me preface that. He's born in Puerto Rico, which is part of the United States, but we'll say people who don't speak the language when they come to this country, which he spoke Spanish and came here. And I think there is an immigrant work mentality, and it's something that is not being cherished the way it used to be, because this is still the land of opportunity. This is a country where you can create your own destiny unlike any other place in the world. And that's why people still are fighting and walking across Mexico to try to get here, is because they want that. So at the end of the day, you know, it's to pay honor to the sacrifice my father made for me to be able to be in the position that I'm in. Quite frankly, I think anything short of that is just fucking an excuse and bullshit that people make up to, you know, I mean, the reality is I could go home right now and watch 5 hours of Narcos and binge watch that, or I could show up here today because I made a commitment to do this for 2 years every week and then see where it goes. I always choose the commitment first, and then after my day's work is done, I'll reward myself with some Narcos binging tonight.
Exactly. You know?
But, you know, for people who are struggling with drive, I think it really just comes down to a mindset, you know, and it's you have to literally, there's no one else that's going to create drive within you. I think some people have it, some people don't. I'll take someone in this organization, in my company that I want to be around, who has drive but not skill. Because with drive, you can overcome so many other things. I can teach you how to take a picture. I can't teach you how to get up and show up on time.
You can always be trained to do something. But as long as you have passion, I think that's
And passion, drive, 1,000%. You know, and I know one of the things I loved about when we connected and you started, came on board. You had never worked in a wedding photography studio before, but it's irrelevant because you had drive and you had passion and you had the ability to implement that within our company. So even though you didn't have this specific skill set, you had other skill sets, you had the drive and the motivation, and then you can apply that to this business.
Exactly.
And that's something you can't teach somebody. I can't teach somebody how to wake up at, you know, 8:30 in the morning, get your shit done, show up on time and be present.
Right.
And I think that's the other thing about drive too, is that gets left out, is it's habitual, right? So it's, there are no excuses, there are no days off, and it's a commitment to 7 days a week fulfilling what your purpose is and showing up on time. And consistency wins, right? So I'll take the guy who practices 7 days a week versus the guy who's a stud athlete that practices 1 day a week. But the mediocre athlete at 7 days a week who puts the work in is probably at some point going to surpass the stud. And I think it's the same in business. If you consistently show up and you show up every day and you put the work in, which is something, again, we talk about a lot, right, people don't want to put that work in. And that's also, like, I love the process of putting the work in. I love creating things. I know that that's what excites, that personally is what excites me and what gets me going and keeps me going.
So you mentioned something about the land of opportunity, right? And I've always been like, I mean, the US, really, why is the land of opportunity? Yep. And as an immigrant, I understand why. I understand why. There's always jobs. There's always work to do. There's always something.
Yep.
But for you, like, to call the you were born here.
Yep.
To call the US a land of opportunity, like, what are the basis of that, just to say that?
Yeah, I mean, there's no other country in the world where, I mean, first of all, we're a capitalist country, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I might get a ton of slack from people who are listening to this. We are not socialist. We're not communist. We are not, you know, an oligarchy. We're none of those things. We are a capitalist country. We're a country that is built on the fundamental foundation of business, capitalism, a free market. And there are really no other economies in the world, for the most part, that are that at this moment.
Correct.
So, you know, if you're born in India, you're born into a caste system. And I'm sorry, you're probably not going to break out of that caste system because you can't marry out of it. You can't get a job out of it. You're born into your social status and you'll die, for the most part, in that social status. In New York, you can be born poor to two drug addicted parents, wind up in social welfare, have no education, but one day decide you're going to work your ass off and become the CEO, or, you know, become the next Jay-Z, right?
Yeah.
Like, go through the worst of things and still come out in a place where you can create an amazing life for yourself. That does not exist in most places in the world. You know, in third world countries, those opportunities just aren't there, right? So if you're in a country that doesn't have an economy, of course, you know, if you're born in Zimbabwe, you know, unless you're born into the upper class, which controls 99% of the wealth in the country, you have no chance. So here, there are those opportunities. You create your own destiny. You can have, what really, in the United States, whatever you want.
That's good. Okay, so now that being said, in the business industry, we have, like, huge, gigantic business.
Mm-hmm.
But what we love about the podcast and the show that we do is that you go into those small businesses and mm-hmm. talk about the struggles and talk about how awful was at the beginning.
Yep.
Because I don't think there's one out there that is like, oh, yeah, out of nowhere, this worked out. But right now, what is the biggest issue that small businesses are facing right now?
I mean, I think there's a couple of things happening right now. I think something I call the Amazon effect. Small businesses, which make up a huge portion of the economy in the United States. So people actually think that it's big business, Amazon, not, and it's actually not. You know, I think people need to become a little bit more savvy about Amazon is actually made up as a collaborative of small businesses who actually sell through the site, similar to Etsy.
Right.
So they do provide a lot of opportunity to small businesses. But that being said, Amazon and companies like that have also changed the way consumers purchase items. So I think small businesses are first being set with, for example, if you're in the luxury market, how do you still provide a luxury item but deliver that item super fast? And sometimes that can be really hard because luxury and fast don't necessarily go together. But Gen Zers or millennials don't necessarily differentiate in certain aspects the fact that a luxury item is going to take substantially longer to build than per se something that you can order on Amazon at the click of a finger. But we become habituated to being able to order and demand anything we want. You know, I mean, I grew up without Netflix. You waited, you woke up Saturday morning to watch a cartoon. It had commercials.
Right. Me too.
You couldn't binge watch 18 seasons. We didn't have literally the world at the touch of our fingertips through an iPhone.
Or go to the Blockbuster like every Friday
and
night. Wait,
and hope the movie was still there.
Exactly. Yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore. No. So we had patience because you had to wait for things. Whereas in today's society, we really don't have that because you don't have to wait for things. Now, that being said, inherently, certain things take time. You know, for us, a client will be like, why can't I just have that photo? We have to retouch it. Well, I don't understand why it takes because there's a process that goes into it. There's an art. There's a level of creativity. You know, why can't you just walk into Ferrari and get a car or a Lamborghini? Because there's a wait for them because they're custom hand manufactured in Italy at the finest craftsmanship.
Exactly.
And some people just don't understand that. It is what it is. But that is a huge, I think, a huge problem businesses are going to be faced with. Number two, the rising cost of labor in this country, which is something we've been faced with for a long time. And it's just why a lot of our work is being outsourced to India and China, right? And in New York State, we're starting to see that, you know, small businesses are going to be faced with $15 an hour minimum wage next year in Manhattan. And people say $15 is a lot of money, you know, is still not enough money. So businesses are going to have to figure out how to run leaner because the cost of labor is going up. And that's a fact of life right now. We're also being faced with higher healthcare costs and et cetera. So going into 2020, I think a lot of small businesses are going to face problems in the sense of how do you do that, right? And a lot of people are going to wind up outsourcing or going 1099 route where you're paying independent contractors rather than having to absorb those costs within the business. The biggest issue I think small businesses are going to face is actually finding good labor. I see it here within my industry, and I know I speak to a ton of other business owners. The work ethic, and I'm not knocking Gen Zers and millennials. I'm just not. There's a fucking problem right now.
There's a gigantic problem
with people's expectations, and that expectation is I graduated college. I deserve to make money. That's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
All you've done is go to school for 4 years and fill out some paperwork.
That's it.
In my opinion. And that when I graduated college, I'd say the same thing about myself. I knew nothing. Right. I lived at home. You know, my mom still did my laundry. Like, you're just not an adult. I had no applicable skills to offer other than the fact that I was a hard worker at that point.
Right.
And I was good with people. I had good people skills. But I had nothing to offer anyone.
Speaking of that, I've seen that a lot. And it says like, oh, well, I can't find a good job because I don't have the experience. Yep. It's like, well, why do you not have the experience?
It's experience first, then the good job.
Exactly. So you have to build your experience in order to do that. Graduation and having a degree, that's not an experience. Yep. That's just going to school and do some essays and just, study like crazy. That's great. But you build experience.
Correct.
And that's just sometimes you have to take jobs in the field that they don't pay any money, but that's how you build experience, correct?
Yeah, and I think that's what's being overlooked right now is that you need to eat shit for a while in order to get where you want to be. The CEO of Walmart did not go from ringing people up at the counter to becoming the CEO of one of the largest companies in the world.
Exactly.
It's just not how it works. Tim Cook did not become CEO of Apple by selling iPhones and it's just not how it goes. If those are your aspirations, that is part of it, right? And I think to a certain degree, you should know all the jobs within an organization, or at least as many as you can, so then you can at least have respect and have a point of reflection back to what people deal with in that organization, and you'll have a better understanding how to best assist them. But ultimately, you need to put in the work, and whatever that work is, if you want to become the world's top fashion photographer, you need to go intern for other fashion photographers. You need to carry their equipment. You need to be around them. You need to see how they work. You need to see what separates them from everybody else. And just because you have a degree, well, that's great. There's millions of people with college degrees in this country. That does nothing. At the end of the day, it's the person's commitment to what they want to do that will let them eventually open those doors. Not to mention, if you're willing to work for free, which that is a huge problem right now. People think that they should be compensated for their time. Why should you be compensated when you bring no value to an organization?
Right.
You know, if somebody comes to me and goes, I want to learn wedding photography. Okay, but you don't bring anything to me at the moment. I bring everything to you.
Correct.
Come work for free. You want to intern? Take a 6-month internship. I'm not going to pay you for that, But at the same token, I find it ironic because those same people are willing to pay $63,000 to an educational system for 4 years and walk out with a degree at $270,000 that they paid for that that literally prepares them for nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing. And even if you're going to medical school, you've only done 4 years, you still have another eight. So you've been prepared to just be more schooled. But in business, what you've learned, okay, maybe some fundamental rules of business, but at the end of the day, you haven't actually learned, you know, if you want to get into real estate, did you learn how to buy and sell houses? Were you involved in transactions? Were you interning at a real estate? No, you weren't for the most part. You maybe took some classes, you understand the terminology, but you haven't done the work that you need to become New York City's top real estate agent. You know, and I don't know what it takes to become that. I'm not a real estate
agent. Right.
But I know it takes a lot of work. You don't start off selling $30 million penthouses. You start off by renting apartments in New York City and then you work your way up. And the thing is, we have to be comfortable starting at the bottom. And I feel like today's generation wants to start at the top, and that's just not how life works.
I think, I don't know if I mentioned it in my podcast that I, when you interview me, that I used to have a job while I was in my last year of college, and I saw an opportunity to do an internship for HBO, and my job was paying me, you know,
like, yeah.
I would say like for a college student, it was good money. And then HBO was like, oh no, it's just your time.
Yep.
And I spoke to my mom, and my mom was like, I did the same thing.
Of course.
So just take it.
Yep.
And thank God I did. I mean, 2 months after, they offered me a position. So that's what you do.
Of course.
You know? I mean, just like sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I was lucky that it only took 2 months. And people sometimes take a year or more, that the learning experience and that building all this process.
I mean, the perfect example is Vogue. You know, they used to have this amazing internship program that would really bring people into the fashion magazine world. And it would open a ton of doors. Well, however many years back, a few girls felt that they were being, quote unquote, taken advantage of and being made to work long hours. Vogue got rid of their internship program.
Yeah.
Because they were like, why are we dealing with this? We're offering people an opportunity to make a better life for themselves. We are offering the opportunity.
We are opening those doors.
They bring no value. They're 22 years old kid. They're kids. Yes, you're going to be made to go get coffee. Because that right now, but guess what? Maybe one day you get coffee and Anna Wintour is there and she needs something else and she turns to you. And the next thing you know, you're on Anna Wintour's team or you're working with her executive assistant. And then 2 years later, you're now her executive. Like, and that's how life works.
Right.
The thing is, those people sued. Folks said, oh, great. We're just not going to have it anymore.
We're just going to close it.
Because it doesn't offer anything to us. At the end of the day, it was a good breeding program to bring people into the organization. But why offer that headache? Why deal with that headache when you're the one giving the value and then people expect to be compensated when you're the one that's basically giving them a free education? So I think those three principles right now are three major issues that small businesses are going to be faced with, you know, over the next couple of years.
Yes, no, I completely agree. Do you think that connects to the immigration mentality that you always talk about?
Yeah, I mean, immigrants don't feel that way.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've immigrated to this country.
Right.
I had lunch with somebody last week. He's been here 3 years. He paints houses Monday through Friday. He works in a restaurant Saturday and Sunday night from 4 to midnight. So I was like, dude, he's like, how long? He's like, I don't know, some 3 years was when I got to the country.
Okay.
I'm like, when was your last day off? He's like, well, I had the flu for 3 days, so I couldn't work. I'm like, okay, cool. Days off? He's like, no, I mean, there's no days off. It's just, there's no concept of it.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, I have to send money back home to my family. I have to pay my rent in New York State. I had to learn the language. I couldn't get a job at first, you know, and all he's faced with all those things. That is now that. Imagine if an American applied that same work ethic to whatever they wanted to do, 7 days a week for 3 years. Holy shit. You speak the language, you have a college degree, and you're going into the workforce, and you apply that level. You would be amazed at what you could accomplish.
Right.
The thing is, no one wants to do that.
Yeah. What do you think is that? I mean, what is that? I know you're very passionate about that subject. So what did that come from? What is that?
Well, we've gotten fat in America. You know, we've had it so easy. We haven't had a war here. We've been at war, but it's in the Middle East, thousands of miles away. We don't even realize we're still at war 18 years later. So I think that's part of the problem. We don't have mandatory military service in this country. So inherently you are not exposed to what other countries have their population exposed to, which is, you know, you have to do either 2 or 4 years, depending on the country you're in, a mandatory military service, you know, if you're under the age of 21.
Right.
So I think we're faced with that. our grandparents grew up in World War II. They were exposed to the Great Depression. We were not. We've had an amazing economic run since 08. So anyone coming into the workforce now would have only been, you know, 13 at that point. So their frame of reference, you know, we've had the best 11 years in the economy ever. 01 to 07 was also amazing. So in the past 18 years, we've only had really 2 years that have been horrific. So couple that with the advent of social media, iPhones, accessibility to content, we want for nothing in this country, you know, and I mean, I have the pleasure and joy of speaking to people who grew up in Cuba. They don't have internet service. They don't have cell phones. They don't have Netflix.
Oh yeah.
They have a much different perspective on ingenuity, on work ethic, because when you don't have that, you're forced to think outside the box. Whereas when everything's given to you, you know, it is, I feel bad for people because they've had it so easy. That inherently is going to be a problem. And I think those problems are going to be exemplified when there is a downturn in the economy. And those people then have been spoiled all these years and everything's been so easy for them. And now they're going to have to be like, oh shit, wait, I can't get a job. Where are you going to go work? And the answer is Starbucks, 7-Eleven,
right.
Five Guys. Yeah. And they're going to be really disappointed because they're going to have to come to grips with the fact that their $300,000 education means shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the saying of like, oh, first world problems.
It's first world problems, yeah.
Because it is. I mean, and I'm not going to, of course, like everybody has their own story and everybody has their own issues. But in this country, you have it easy.
Yep.
Like you have it. I know, I mean, I come from Venezuela and I know a lot of people who struggle a lot and not only in immigration process,
sure.
Not only, it's just, yeah, you've been lucky. You've been blessed. So
I think the other thing too is a lot of Americans have not been exposed to third world. And there are places in America right. that have that aspect. You know, if you look at states like Mississippi, Alabama, who are, you know, the poorest of the 50 states right. where that median household income is under $18,000 a year. Basically the whole state's living under the poverty line. They're exposed to some of that. Here in New York, I mean, we've gentrified pretty much almost all the five boroughs, and there are still pockets of poverty. But by and large, I mean, we're really, really, really doing well in these five boroughs. So we're not exposed to that. And if you haven't traveled outside, if you haven't been to rural Dominican Republic where people live under a metal roof, literally a metal roof, and I say a roof because there's no sides. It's a roof.
It's
that's where they live under. Mm-hmm. And they don't have drinking water and they don't have running. There's no toilets, right? That's third world. That's poor. That is no access to anything. That is not being able to speak a language properly, even their own, right? Grammatically, they're not correct. There is no access. There's no education. There's no way out, right? A lot of those kids, the only way they're going out is if they get a baseball scholarship.
Exactly.
If you're a boy, you know. That is poverty. That's no access. Here, I mean, even in the worst of conditions, there's someone or some way you can get out. And I have friends who've made it out of really bad situations because they took that single opportunity and their life changed forever. And that could be joining the military, you know, where you go through the ROTC program and then, you know, you have nothing, but at the end you have an access to get a college education. That doesn't exist other places.
Yeah. That's just like at least one step to go to. Okay, so right now we are finishing our shows this year, right? And for you, for Anthony, 2019 going to 2020, what is the biggest lesson that you think you've learned this year?
Man, I mean, the show has really brought a different perspective, right? You know, and listening to people like my friend Bobby Atiko talk about living out of his car 18 years ago in a house that had bullet holes in it. You know, I look back at my life and I'm like, shit, I never dealt with that. You know, like, I mean, so that's one of the biggest lessons I take, you know, is just being grateful for what I have. I think the biggest lesson also as well is just from business and personal is that you have to have harmony. If one is out of whack, if you have a really bad work life, that's going to affect your personal life. If you have a really bad personal life, that's going to affect your work life. And granted, there never will be perfection in anything. You're never going to have both perfectly in balance. But if there's toxicity in one or toxicity in both, it's going to affect you extremely negatively. And you have to be careful of that, you know. And for me, it's finding that balance of not always having my foot redlining the car, you know. And while you can do that for short spurts, when you do that consistently, you eventually blow the engine. And I have the habit of I can overwork myself, literally to the point where I get sick. And, you know, I mean, you guys know you don't have the emails flowing on Saturdays and Sundays. Work effort and dedication to work is not a problem I suffer from, right? Yeah. But I do have a problem turning that off sometimes. And, you know, having that more quote unquote holistic balance, or finding a day to shut my phone off, or finding time to have a meal with friends, or and that positive effect and that laughter and that joy that that brings to me carries forward to the next day when I wake up, and I'm a better person to deal with at work. You know, I'm less anxious, I'm less stressed out. So for me, it's realizing that those two things really, they ebb and flow. It's a yin and a yang. And if one is really fucked up, it's going to screw the other one up. And you need to really be cognizant of that. Now, that being said, I want to stipulate here, I am not on the whole work-life balance that everyone is talking about right now, where people want to work 20 hours a week, take off 90 hours, travel 8 weeks a year. Yeah. That is a load of shit that's being propagated by social media, and especially by influencers who take pictures of themselves on beaches all year long. That is not what I'm talking about.
I don't know how that will work. But okay. Yeah. I mean,
And it's going to go away one
day. Like, I've never done that.
Is an economy that's ready to crash. Right. But I'm not talking about that. I don't think that that's realistic. I think that's a bunch of propaganda bullshit that people put out on social media. That's their fake life. I'm talking about real balance, which is work hard, but also shut off. And that is more realistic, in my opinion, than posting pictures every day up of yourself, you know, in a bathing suit on a beach with a six pack. Correct. That's not life. Also, 99% of the population doesn't look like that. But I think finding that better balance of being dedicated, showing up, making sure you're 100% focused at work, but being equally as focused on being happy, personal endeavors, whether it's going to the gym, whatever it may be, but finding that other time to really dial in and focus in on yourself so that both are more harmonious.
So in the past two something years that I've been working with you, you're a nonstop. Like, I've never seen you stop. And like, sometimes you stop for like a coffee and then you connect with something about work, and then you connect about something about life. Yeah. And then you, and we were talking the other day about this, I think it's an article that you, you were reading about like checking your email only twice a day.
Yeah. I failed.
I was going to tell you the same thing, because it's like, I can do that. I told you right away. It was like, That's impossible for me. I just can't do that. And not because I have my phone all the time, or it's a thing. Like, you know that it's there, and you know that you have to respond.
It's an addiction. And anyone who wants to describe it as anything else, we have an addiction to our phones, right? Whether it's email, whatever it is, Instagram. It's finding a way to balance that and not have it attached to you at all times, because it does control you. And, you know, if you check an email and it's a negative email, that doesn't just leave you. It stays with you, right?
Oh, yeah. Even though you don't reply.
Of course.
It's just go there and you go to bed and you're just like...
Yeah. Instead of being with your partner, or being with your family, now your line of consciousness and your line of presence has been shifted from being in that moment, whether it's being intimate with your partner, spending time with your kids, to thinking of something else that has no fucking relevance or actual meaning or significance at the moment. And that's the 99% of what you deal with in an email is absolutely not relevant in terms of like the grand scheme of life. There are emergencies that come up.
Of course.
There are issues that come up. But 99% of what you engage with on social media and on emails is not going to matter. It is just, they're trivial emails that we have now become addicted to being corresponding with, in the same way we text message. Email has become a second form of text, whereas it used to be electronic mail.
Yeah.
Is why some people don't even know what email stands for. Yeah. It was mail sent electronically. Mail takes 3 days to get there, in best case scenario, and with the USPS, which is a disaster, sometimes 2 weeks. But emails were supposed to be, hey, you sent an email, and then a day or two later you replied. Not, you know, 38 emails in one day from one client, which become a conversation because people don't want to pick up the phone.
And then back and forth.
Whereas it's a 5-minute phone conversation now turns into multiple emails, which are then misconstrued because the tonality of the emails can't be picked up. And so there's so many problems just with that for me. You know, I like to speak on the phone sometimes. I think it's a lot easier. You can hear somebody's inclination in their voice, the tonality they're speaking with. You can connect with them on a deeper level. So advice to business owners, pick up the fucking phone and call people sometimes. It really will make a big difference, because you can avoid a lot of issues rather than just going back and forth via email a million times.
Right. Yeah. I remember the first boss that I had back then was Cinemax. I was stressed because I was in charge of like releasing some new idea for the channel, whatever. And she stopped me in the final cut room and she said, "This is not an emergency room, you know? Like, if something goes wrong, something goes wrong, yeah. and that's it." And we're talking about a huge industry. We're talking about yeah. a channel. Sure. That's something that is going to go live, and if something goes wrong, you might lose a client that paid for the space, or you might lose... And she stopped me right there and says, "This is not an emergency yep. room." And that's been with me forever, because it's true. It's like, if it's not in my hands right this second, then there's nothing I can do, and we will deal with it, you know, like in that process. So that being said, you've built this company how many years ago? 20 years ago?
Almost.
Okay. So if I want to start a company right now, like mm-hmm. today, what was the first and the biggest advice that you can give me?
Be prepared to work. Okay. And sacrifice. You know, it's going to take longer than you anticipate to become successful in most cases. There's outliers to that. Great book, by the way, by Malcolm Gladwell. But those are called outliers for a reason. The whole instantaneous success thing, the Mark Zuckerbergs of Facebook, where, you know, he had an idea and 5 years later, he's a billionaire. That is not how life works. You're talking about 0.001% of the population who come up with an idea. For every Mark Zuckerberg, there are 5,000 people with an idea who have failed miserably. Be prepared to fail. Do not be worried about the failures. Embrace the failures, because those are the lessons you're going to learn. And really, you have to fall in love with failing, right? Because you're going to fail way more than you succeed.
Correct.
It's how you handle those failures and how you apply them to the rest of your life. I've fallen on my face far more than I've succeeded. The only difference between me and the other person is I get back up. And I move forward with that. And I don't make those same mistakes again. You know, whether it's learning how to hire, learning what to look for and how I hire somebody, learning how to deal with a client, learning what clients to say no to, because the ones you say no to are more important than the ones you say yes to, because the ones you say no to are the ones that are going to fucking ruin your business, because if they're unhappy with the product or service you provide, they're going to tell everybody. So it's really important to curate your own clients. Now, that being said, that's as a business evolves. People who are trying to curate clients who day one are like, "I can't work," or "Shut up. Like, yeah. I hate that." No, any chance you have to work, go get it, because you don't know.
Go and do it.
Go and do it. You don't know who that opportunity is going to open up for. And people that things I did 18 years ago, granted, I wouldn't do them today. If somebody called me and said, "Hey, do you want to shoot this free?" The answer is most of the time it's going to be no. But I'm 19 years into my business. That's when you can start to become selective. 19 days? No, you cannot become selective. You cannot negotiate rates. You can't turn around and say, "I'm worth X." You're not. Who are you? You just started. You're literally at the beginning. You're an infant. You do not say no. You say yes to everything. And then as that business evolves, you move forward.
Because do you think that those yeses all the time would teach you a lesson?
Yeah, of course, because that's how you start to some of those yeses are going to be failures.
That you need. Yeah.
Yeah, and the only way to expose yourself is to expose yourself. Exactly. The only way to gain knowledge is to put yourself out there. And the more people you can put yourself in front of, especially in the beginning, you know, and again, people, that is a big block people have, is they don't want to put themselves out there. They don't want to put the fucking work in. And then they're upset because they're not where they want to be 5 years later.
Correct.
Forget your personal life. I don't want to hear that shit if you're starting a business. 2 years, block it off.
Right.
Weekends, birthdays. No, the answer is no to all of it. Right. If you have nothing, then you go. I didn't go to anything for years. I have no tolerance for people who come in and go, "All right, I can't work. That's my birthday." Who? What?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean it's your birthday? Like, my dad worked his birthday unless it was on a Sunday when he had off. Like, so he'd work every 6 years. He'd have off on his birthday. I have zero tolerance for that mentality, because that's the mentality that is going to not get you where you want to go. And there's plenty of people out there who will tell you this that are very successful. You know, you can turn on and look at Tony Robbins, Gary Vee. They all have the same message. And there's a reason they've succeeded so far beyond everybody else is in their infancy stages. You know, Gary Vee talks about working 18 years straight and his friends were at college and he was at his dad's liquor store.
Right.
Well, there's a reason why he's so successful in his 40s.
Exactly.
Because when he was in his teens and his 20s, he was working while everyone else
was. He did all the job.
I mean, yeah. I don't ever, like, my friends would be like, oh, we're doing this. Cool. If I can make it, I will. And the answer most of the time was no, because I'd be working weddings. So this whole concept of, like, the bottom line is you have to be prepared to put the work in. Expect to put more work in than what you think you're going to need to. Expect to fail more. But when you fail, embrace those failures. And really commit to the process. It is not going to be as easy as you think it is. The idea is the easy part. Implementing that idea now is the hard part. But as long as there's a market for what you need right now, if you're trying to sell, bikinis to Eskimos, not a good business idea.
Yeah.
I would imagine if they even had 2 days, they could wear them a year. You know, you don't have a viable market for it. Right. So the first thing is, before
just,
you
like,
actually
scratch that idea, again. Yeah.
Maybe sell parkas, like North Face parkas, that's most, that they need those, or ice tools. So you have to first make sure that there's a market for what you need before you even start the business, right? Secondly, then, after you've decided and you now know that there is a market, you test that. But then it's now the work begins. And that's really, really, really putting yourself out there. And I don't expect someone, look, when I started taking pictures 23 years ago, I wasn't any good, nor should I have been. I started 23 years ago.
Exactly.
There's a reason I wasn't any good, because I didn't know what I was doing. And I worked and I worked and I worked and I kept putting myself out there. And if somebody offered me an opportunity, I took it, and I worked for free a lot of the time. I did a lot of international travel for free. Two reasons. One is it exposed me to other cultures, which I embrace now as an adult, because I don't necessarily want to travel as much. But number two is it was work, right? And through that work, you know, they talk about steel sharpens steel. You don't use wood to sharpen steel, right? And so the way I look at that is, if you want to be steel, you need to put the work in, which is the steel, and that will inherently sharpen your knife. And the sharper your knife gets over time, you can start to procure higher prices. You can start to be more exclusive, but you're not going to walk in. For example, if you're in the wedding photography industry and J-Lo is going to be your client, that's just not how life
works.
That's
not going to happen. Yeah.
Maybe in 5 years, that's a realistic goal, or in 10 years, but in 5 years, no. And for anyone who needs a reference point on this, Stephen Pressfield's The Art of Work is an amazing book. And he talks about putting 10,000 hours in. And that's really, when you look at that as 10 years or 5 to 10 years of work before you begin to become a master of your craft. And I love, I'm going on a tangent here, but I love Japanese people for this reason.
Oh yeah. Completely.
Whether it's tattoo artists or calligraphers or samurais, you study for decades under a master before you can even touch the fish.
The culture is completely different.
Because they have a respect for the craft. It's not, I graduated college, I deserve a job. That's great. You still need to learn how to become a master sushi chef. And that may take 30 years.
Yeah.
Big difference.
When I did my thesis, I remember that I was happy with the results. I was happy with the script. I was happy with the actors and everything. And then I saw it probably like a few months after, and I told the professor that he was helping with the thesis, and I said, like, I hated it. I hate it. It's awful. And he's like, well, you should, because you are new and you're now doing different things. Your view is different. That's progression.
Correct.
Okay. Because the first thing that you're going to do, of course, it's not going to be 100% perfect. You probably feel good. But now that you are more experienced, you hate that because you, I remember I told him, it's like, I could have done better. And he's like, no, that's what you did in the moment. Now you have some different point of view, and that's going to help you do something better. And I think that's what it is, you know? In your shows, you always finish with one last question, right? Do you know that question?
Yep.
Right? So let's just say, Anthony, 10 years from now, what would you say to that guy?
What would I say to myself from 10 years ago is, really try to stay present. All too often, I think we worry about, it's a Buddhist fundamental, a Buddhist proverb, which is, we live in yesterday, thinking about tomorrow, losing today. And I think that holds true, because if you can actually force yourself to stay present and accountable, and be in the moment, whether that's, in business with your partner, intimately with your dog, whatever it is, I think the joy of life becomes much more beneficial. I think when we're, you know, hiking, and which I love to do, and I'm with my dog, and I'm thinking about work, you know, I lose that connection with where I'm at. And I think, you know, I think ultimately when you can stay present, you stay more grounded. And I think if I could give myself one piece of advice, it would be that. And I follow that up with also really like drilling in the never quit mentality, right? Always stay the course, you know, right. And that is a piece of advice that I've learned over these past 10 years is, you know, never, ever quit, you know, and that's a Winston Churchill quote in World War II, right. When they were down, and, you know, he's never, ever quit, because if you quit, it's over, right? And stay the course. If it's worth fighting for, you'll know it, and you persevere through it. Things are going to happen. People die, dogs die, whatever, you know, things close to you happen, tragedies happen, but persevere through that, because that is also going to make you the person you are and the fabric of who you are. And ultimately, in the end, I think going to make you a much better person.
5 years or 10 years from now?
Where do I see myself?
What do you see yourself?
Oof. You know, I mean, I think there's so many, you know, I mean, I love what I do here at Anthony Vasquez Photography, and I love more so the people that I work with. So I think I've achieved a lot of what I've wanted to in this industry, and I want to keep moving forward with that. I think what now makes me the most passionate is providing other people and facilitating the opportunities of other people. And I think that is the true definition of success, is not what you can do for yourself, but what you can do for others. And I think the more value you bring to other people's lives, the more enriched and better your life is. So the next 10 years of my life, I want to give as much as possible. And I think the return on investment on that is exponential, because it brings joy and love into your life, but the joy and the gratitude of helping other people achieve their dreams, you know, and I think that to me is a big focus within my next 5 to 10 years, is going to be, how do I help all the people around me? How do I support them? How do I see them accomplish what they want to accomplish? And how do I open up doors that I may have or have not had access to, so these people can accomplish their goals?
That's fantastic. Personally, I love working with you, man.
Oh,
I mean, it's you're a great human being. You're a great leader, and it's awesome just to not only learn about business, which I had no idea, and learn about how to deal with life, business, family, and all that together. So I'm really happy and
shit. Don't make me cry.
And grateful that I became part of your team.
Awesome.
Right? Yeah. So it's cool. Good, man. Yeah, all good.
That's a wrap. I mean, for those who've listened in, thank you. And more importantly, thank you for doing this, Sylvia. I know we sprung it upon you and you were extremely reluctant, but hopefully if it's well received, we'll do this more often.
Cool, man. That's fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Hey, everybody. Doing this has been an absolute journey and an amazing time. I have learned so much, and I want to thank you all for listening in. If you kindly would, we would just ask you for your support. If you've liked the show, if you've gained anything from it, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or any of the other platforms where you are viewing this. We would greatly appreciate it, and it means the world.